funds, the U.S. Federal Reserve says the country's economic recovery has lost momentum. Lawyers say U.S. courts have made it impossible to win legal cases against pedophile priests. And leaders of Colombia and Venezuela meet to defuse tension between the two countries.
Hello everyone, it's 2:30 a.m. here in Tehran and you're watching the news here on Press TV.
Many thanks for joining us. The U.S. Federal Reserve says the pace of America's economic recovery and job creation have slowed in recent months. The Fed promises to maintain stimulus spending to support the weak economic recovery. In a statement, the Federal Open Market Committee says household spending is increasing gradually, but it added that consumer spending is constrained by high unemployment, modest income growth, and tight credit. The committee says it will maintain the target range for the federal funds rate at 0 to 1/4%. It added that it will continue to monitor the economic outlook. It also underscored that it will employ its policy tools as necessary to promote economic recovery. Well, Rodney Shakespeare is a London-based professor of binary economics. He says U.S. policymakers have been telling a lot of lies about America's economic recovery. Let's listen in.
The economy is fundamentally flawed because it's become an economy concerned totally with finance and not with the real economy. They've actually hollowed out the American economy, and they create money for any purpose except for productive capacity and putting productive capacity in the hands of the bulk of the population. Now, at last, you're getting some recognition that they've been telling a lot of lies about a recovery and that the thing is flawed and it's collapsing. And what is happening now today is they're starting the last desperate moves on their just a little bit away from printing money outright, the sort of thing that used to be done in what was used to be called banana republics. When your policy is collapsed, everything is out of kilter, you've smashed your own production, then you just print money and hope something would happen. Now, that is what they're doing at this moment. They're only a few steps away from it.
A U.S. lawyer who sued the Catholic Church over pedophilia among its clergy is now giving up his fight. Bill McMurray says it's impossible to win cases against the Vatican. The attorney made the remarks a day after asking a Kentucky court to dismiss the child abuse case he brought 6 years ago. The suit sought to hold the Vatican accountable for all child sex abuses carried out by Catholic priests in the U.S. The case was filed by three men who claimed that they were sexually abused when they were boys. The plaintiffs asked for their case to be dropped after earlier rulings in U.S. courts recognized the Vatican as a sovereign state. That means the Vatican enjoys broad immunity from prosecution.
Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez and his Colombian counterpart Juan Manuel Santos have met in a bid to mend their country's severed ties. The two leaders met in private in the Colombian city of Santa Marta. Observers say the agenda of the meeting is likely to be topped by U.S. military bases in Colombia, return of ambassadors, and the reopening of the borders to bilateral trade. Both presidents have expressed optimism for improved ties. Tension between the two Latin American countries peaked last month. This after Bogota accused Caracas of harboring Colombian rebels.
U.S. Middle East envoy George Mitchell has held talks with acting Palestinian Authority chief Mahmoud Abbas. The meeting ended without any agreement on direct talks between Israel and the Palestinian Authority. Press Secretary Sara Khalili reports.
U.S. Middle East envoy George Mitchell has failed to secure Palestinian agreement to go to direct talks with Israel. He was in the region to push for direct talks amid Palestinian public's fears the PA might bow to U.S. pressure and agree to meet the Israelis face to face. Mitchell met with PA leaders in Ramallah and then headed to Israel, where he concluded his one-day trip. after meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. While Israel announced its readiness for direct talks, the PA demanded a total halt to Israeli settlement building in the whole of West Bank, an agreement on a framework, agenda, and timeline for negotiations. This includes, among other things, Israel's acceptance of a Palestinian state that would include the West Bank, East Jerusalem, Al-Quds, and Gaza Strip.
We are continuing our efforts, despite the difficulties and obstacles that we have faced in the past and which we know we'll face in the future.
I cannot say that we have an agreement, but we had an in-depth, constructive and serious discussions. Ideas were exchanged. Once again, we are not against direct negotiations. Once again, we want to resume direct negotiations, and we believe that the key to direct negotiations is in the hand of the Israeli government.
On the same day, tens of Palestinian activists affiliated to the Mubadara party took to the streets of Ramallah to urge PA not to resume direct talks. According to recent statistics, the Palestinian public in both the West Bank and the Gaza Strip strongly opposes switching to direct talks.
The only side that would benefit from such negotiations while settlements continue to grow is Israel. And Israel wants these negotiations as a cover for its de facto establishment of a system of apartheid and Pantostanization of the West Bank.
The Hamas movement also slammed Mitchell's mission and accused the PA of bowing to the U.S. will. Despite receiving a green light from the Arab League to embark on direct talks with Israel, Mahmoud Abbas has so far refused to budge. Since May, U.S. Envoy George Mitchell has held 5 rounds of indirect talks between the two sides. The indirect negotiations were first agreed in March, but the initiative collapsed within days when Israel announced plans to build thousands of settlement units in East Jerusalem, Al-Quds.
U.S. President Barack Obama said he wants direct talks to resume in early September before a partial freeze on Israeli settlement construction in the occupied West Bank expires after 10 months. And as Netanyahu has signaled that he will not extend the measure, the prospects for the so-called peace process do not seem rosy. Sari Al-Khalili, Press TV. UN says it's unable to deal with the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Pakistan. This comes as floods and rains continue to wreak havoc in the country. Press Vij Javed Rana has the story.
Catastrophe in the history of the country.
The United Nations, in its initial assessment, has reported that Pakistan needs hundreds of millions of dollars in short term and billions of dollars in the long term to rehabilitate millions of flood-affected population from the northwest to south of the country. But the funding is the biggest challenge for the UN.
The response, as it is now, is not adequate to those unmet needs. So far, direct contributions to the UN system are counted as approximately $26 million as funds are still coming in, and additionally, over $67 million has been pledged by various donors.
The UN assessment indicates that the scale of disaster caused by the flood is bigger than that of 2004 tsunami in South Asia and 2005's earthquake in Pakistan and 2010's earthquake in Haiti. The UN says it simply doesn't have resources to respond to the crisis of this scale. The UN points out that many areas, including parts of mountainous Swat Valley of northwest Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province, are still inaccessible because of continuous rains and rising water levels. According to eyewitness accounts from the disaster-hit areas, the United Nations is not very visible even in accessible regions. But the UN seems to be more focused on making assessment at this stage.
It is estimated that about 14 million people are affected all across the country. Thousands of villages are wiped out, hundreds of kilometers of roads, about 100 of bridges, as well as many power stations and lines, water pumps, irrigation systems are destroyed.
As per UN figures, 2 million people are still living under the open sky. The UN has also reported that 2.6 million acres of farmland has submerged, much of it in the agriculture heartland in the province of Punjab, the food basket of Pakistan. Javed Rana, Press TV, Islamabad.
Well, at least 702 people have been confirmed dead in the devastating weekend mudslides in northwestern China.
Officials there say more than 1,000 people are still missing in Gansu province following floods and landslides caused by torrential downpours. Authorities have sent thousands of soldiers and rescue workers to help out with reach and rescue efforts. A total of 20,000 people in Zhaoqiu County have been evacuated. This comes as floods in the region have already destroyed more than 1 million homes. Summer floods and landslides have hit many areas of China since April, killing more than 2,000 people, with hundreds still listed as missing.
British Muslims have been under constant pressure since the bomb attacks on London's transportation system in July 2005. To change the situation, one Muslim group has launched a campaign against what it describes as extremist interpretations of Islam. Press Office's Hassan Ghani reports.
The group Minhaj al-Quran has a sizable following amongst Britain's Pakistani Muslim community. Its leader, Dr. Taher al-Qadri, preaches what his followers describe as a moderate form of Islam.
In recent times, the group's leader has made significant efforts to stress that Islam condemns terrorism and has even published a 600-page fatwa outlining his teachings on the matter. The British media has taken up the story and covered it extensively, but Minhaj al-Quran say they want more support from other Muslim groups.
In the last few days, the group has held Britain's first so-called anti-terrorism camp for Muslim youth and have launched a mobile library equipped with literature preaching the group's message. The message is that Muslims must only voice disagreements with the authorities in a peaceful manner, and that Islam is a religion that preaches integration.
Islam doesn't allow killing an individual. How can it allow killing civilians? How can it allow killing children? How can it allow killing non-combatants? Islam even doesn't allow killing civilians and children in a warfare.
But the group's approach has run into criticism from some British Muslims, who agree that the killing of civilians is totally unacceptable, but believe that Western foreign policy has played a major role in radicalizing some young Muslims. They say that Minhaj al-Quran has failed to take this into account, and argue that any effort to stop the spread of terrorism will fail unless this key factor is recognized.
Our front is academic. Our front is intellectual. Our front is spiritual. We are, our struggle is on these fronts. We are not in politics. We are not in government. So we are basically clarifying the issues, the concepts at an academic level. One of the reasons is foreign policy. There is no denial about that. But what we are saying is that does not justify killing of non-combatants.
What has somewhat boosted the group's credibility is the fact that, unlike some other so-called moderate Muslim groups, it doesn't receive any government funding for its work. But the debate over how to tackle terrorism and even the definition of terrorism is likely to continue. Hassan Ghani, Press TV, Birmingham.
Thanks for watching us. If you're missing anything on this broadcast or any other one, there is still one more place to log on to. It's allthews.presstv.ir with the latest world news as well as the top stories. Check us out live on the Watch Live and the audio stream links, both of which appear next to one another on the top right side hand corner of Press TV's homepage. That's allthews.presstv.ir.
Stay tuned though, don't go away. How very